Welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast with Paul McGuire and Trey Gibson, the show where education and experience collide to help you go deeper in your parenting. Simultaneously broadcasting from Alabama and Texas, here are your hosts, Paul and Trey.
Well, welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast. This is the show where experience and education collide to take you deeper in your parenting. Date today is August the 31st, 2012. Paul, how are you, my man?
Trey, I'm doing good, buddy. How are you?
We are doing well. I guess we talked about this earlier this week, but we've been kicking a stomach bug all this week. I got it on Friday, and then my wife got it on Sunday, which is one of the reasons why we couldn't record at our normal time. And let me tell you, I am glad that's over.
Oh, I bet you are. And that, you know, those things tend to run right on through the house. Everybody tends to get a hold of them, and it's just a miserable time for everybody. Can you believe August is already over?
I literally, you said exactly what I was thinking at the exact same time I was thinking, because I went, wait a second, did I just say August 31st?
It's 31st.
What?
Wow.
It can't almost be September.
I know. Around here, August 31st, Friday. So college football season actually started last night. Around here in Alabama, we are big college football fans. So we're kind of geared up for the games that are going to be coming on tomorrow. And I personally am a big Alabama fan, and this is my time of year. So I'm ready for it to go.
You know, I am one of the most, maybe I should say the most unusual men out there, because, you know, I try to be the prototypical masculine as much as I can, but I've never done football. I mean, I played football in high school, but I never watch it. I'll watch the Super Bowl, because that's, you know, you get two teams that are extremely good, and watching them, I love that, but I never do football. It's weird.
Yeah, that's all the pro that I watch is when it's Super Bowl time. I kind of keep track of who's, you know, winning and who's losing, but when it's college football, Saturdays in the fall, it's just something about it around here.
It's
I guess
home.
That's what I grew up around, but can't live without it. I'm glad it's back.
I think that's fair.
Well, Trey, what are we talking about today?
We are going to be talking about homeschooling. Last week, we did a little bit of a rundown, pulling from your knowledge on homeschooling, which, again, I just want to compliment you on how good that was. That was just littered with fantastic knowledge, but also just wisdom.
Thank you.
I thought that was an exceptionally good episode. I really bragged on you to my wife, Corey. I thought that was good. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about what the Gibsons do. And so you're actually going to kind of pseudo-interview me today and what we do with our homeschooling stuff. And I do want to issue a disclaimer on my end before you start asking me questions. I want to be real careful on this. When I talk about this stuff, I have to be super careful, because I have to make sure that people understand very clearly that the phrase "I disagree with you," and I'm not saying this to you, Paul. I'm saying this to the listener audience in general, especially those that are attending public school. When I say "I disagree with you" or anything like that, it is not the same thing as "I hate you" or even that you're doing it wrong. And so
sure.
I want to make sure people hear me say that up front. I am not accusing anybody of doing it the wrong way, or I don't think this is for everybody. It's time consuming. It's a lot harder in a lot of ways. And so I want people to hear me say, I don't think this is for everybody. I don't think you're doing something wrong if you're not doing this. We're not elitists in this. We certainly don't think that we're any better than other people. But some people will feel that way when we talk about this. So I wanted to make sure I disclaimered that at the start.
Yeah, that sounds good, Trey, and that is good. You know, some people will hear something that's not exactly what was said there and take it as a personal attack themselves, so it's probably good you set that out front. I brought this topic up to you a couple of weeks ago, and we kicked around maybe this little mini-series of back to school one week and homeschool the next week, and from a personal perspective, there's a little bit of self-interest here, too, because you guys know I blog at Affluent Student on all things parenting, and homeschool is one of those niches that is, you know, really has its place and is starting to, you know, is gaining some momentum, you know, different places, different areas across the country. And my wife and I personally are sort of interested in it because I've got a fourth grader right now, and she's in middle school. The middle school that she's coming up to, let's just say it's less than optimal in our opinion for, you know, what we want her to go into and the environment that we want them to work under. You know, the whole No Child Left Behind Act, the requirements for the state of Alabama to meet those standards. Both the middle school and the high school, unfortunately, that she is zoned for right now, failed to meet the adequate yearly progress for the last two straight years. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, has to give us some cause for concern, and we have to start thinking about, you know, quality quality of education and so forth. So, you know, we're looking at homeschooling as maybe an option once Ashley leaves the fifth grade and would be going into that middle school time. So a lot of these questions here are things that my wife and I talked about and, you know, really wanted to get to somebody who's doing it right now and really just, you know, dig into the whys and the mechanics and, you know, the cost and the pitfalls and things like that. So that's where this is coming from here on my side. And hopefully listeners will get something good out of it. You ready to go on this?
I'm ready to rock and roll.
All right. So, Trey, set it up for us. You know, how old are your kids? How many of them are currently being homeschooled? What, you know, what kind of led you guys down this path?
Truthfully, and this kind of blows people away, but all four of our kids are currently being homeschooled. And see, this is weird because our oldest daughter is 6, my son is 4, and my daughter Cora is 2. But also, my daughter Charlotte's 3 months old. And so this one, it fascinates people. It intrigues them when I say that. But absolutely, yes, we even are homeschooling our daughter Cora because we are beginning to teach her things like sign language. Now, first off, a lot of people don't know, but babies cannot articulate through their mouth until much later down the line when they can start verbalizing what they're doing, but they can actually start performing simple movement gestures with their hands and things like that at very young. So we've actually begun teaching American Sign Language to our 3-month-old daughter, and she is already picking it up. She'll start to fuss, and then she'll, when we come in the room, she'll look at us and she'll start squeezing her hand, just like if you were squeezing a stress ball. That's the sign for milk, and she'll start squeezing that when she sees mama, which mama knows it's time to go over and pick her up. So in reality, we do every single one of our kids in homeschooling of some sort. Again, my daughter Anna is 6. She is turning out to be our little biologist. Grant is 4 and Cora is 2, and so kind of leading into what you said, the next part of that question is what kind of drove us to do this? That is a very complex answer. I'm going to be reading. I went ahead and submitted these questions to my wife for all the listeners out there today, and I had her answer some of these as well. So I'm going to be reading some of her direct responses as well, because in a lot of ways, she's teacher. I mean, she's teacher, sure. Principal. I mean, she's every single thing at the School of Gibson that we've got. And so some of these I'm going to be reading from, but before I get into this too deep, I've got to break down a concept here of what we do, because I think a lot of people, and I want everybody to hear and say, I'm a product of the public education system. I came out of it. I've been very successful. I've got a degree in counseling psychology. I'm working at a very, very nice college. And so, I mean, I want people to hear me say that we don't think that people that come out of there are totally messed up. I'm a product of it, and I'm appreciative of what I got through my education. But I think a lot of people take this standard school mentality, right? They take that classroom setting, and when they think homeschool, they go and they envision this classroom sitting in a house, right? So they see the same desks and the same chalkboards or the whiteboards or whatever else, and they see that kind of mentality. Now, that's true for some homeschoolers. There's a lot of very rigid type A homeschooling parents, and I think they're wonderful that they're doing it that way, that set school up. But a lot of the homeschooling is a little more laid back than that. It's a little more flexible. Now, I'm going to separate that away from what Corey and I do. We actually practice something that's called unschooling, which is even kind of a more – I mean, it's actually a little controversial to a lot of people. I'm going to try to just break this down in a nutshell for folks. Paul, if you have any questions, just stop me at any time. Basically – unschooling is kind of like the educational philosophy, I guess, that centers on the idea that you should allow your kids to learn through natural life experiences. That can be things like playing games. That can be like even household responsibilities, work experience around the house, and social interaction, getting them involved with other people. So rather than this idea of like your traditional school curriculum. So we're all going to sit down. We're going to open up our books to page whatever, and we're going to go through our science lesson on the periodic, you know, elements of tables, or the life cycle of an animal, maybe, right? Let's take that one, because that's what my daughter's on right now, is life cycles of animals. So instead of sitting down and reading through this curriculum, unschooling is more of the idea that let's get them out of this classroom setting and let's put them in natural life experiences. So the other day, we were outside running around and playing, and my daughter found a cocoon underneath our slide. There's like 4 or 5 of them underneath there. She goes, Dad, what is this? So we ran over and I said, well, Anna, that's a cocoon. And she goes, Dad, what's a cocoon? So you see how the questions start to flow. I said, well, this is basically the pupa form of a butterfly. Well, Dad, what's a pupa? Well, and so we went through this thing, and so the next thing that we'd known, we had gone through the entire life cycle of what a butterfly goes through, from its birth, transformation, metamorphosis, all the way back to butterfly, then dying again. We went through all of those things, and then the question came up, well, Dad, does everything have a life cycle? And so you can see how just that one single experience of doing something, and we were just playing, I think at the time we were playing like cowboys and ostrich or something. I don't know. It was some game that my daughter had come up with, and we were playing that, and then that's where this had came out of. So unschooling says we're going to derigidify. I totally made that word up, Paul. Totally made it up.
Perfect.
So again, it kind of pushes kids to want to explore. And again, it gets away from this idea that like we need a curriculum. Conventional grading methods, for instance, like you've got to make a 100% or a 90%, and those kinds of things are typically kind of dissuaded. A lot of parents don't like that, because the next thing when they hear that, well, how do they know how well they're doing? And we'll get into that a little bit in a little bit. But the mindset behind unschooling is that it's counterproductive. It puts kids worried more and more focused on the percentage of how well they're going to do rather than on learning, on being curious, on being fascinated by stuff. Kind of the root of all of it is the basic idea is this. Unschooling says this. When it comes to kids, kids are innately curious. They just they want to know about things. I mean every parent gets that. Whenever your kid comes out, they're always asking why. Why does that work? What is that going on? And so the idea behind that is that we need to encourage our kids to be more like that, right? So we argue as a family. My wife and I argue as a family that whenever you try to stick a kid in a classroom setting, we call that institutionalization, right? It's kind of this one size fit all. I thought you worded that real well. I've started using a phrase you used a couple weeks ago, but like that factory model, you know, of school. We believe that that's completely inefficient, that does not work for kids. It doesn't do a kid well, because it requires every kid to be able to learn, a specific subject in a particular matter in one particular place at a particular time, right? And so, this can be a problem. I mean, this is just basic learning skills, right? So let's say you've got a kid who really struggles in algebra, okay? They really have a hard time learning algebra. And then let's say they're also not a morning person. Every single one of my geometry and algebra courses were in guess what time when I was in high school?
Right, bright and early.
Bright and early in the morning. It was the very first classes in there. And I'm saying this because that's actually my personal experience. I am not a morning person. I wasn't then, still not now. And so that was the worst possible time that you could set something like that up. And so the institutionalized school, we have a big problem with that, because it says that you've got to do these certain things at this certain time, and that doesn't necessarily factor in who the person is. We also, in terms of developmental stuff, if you read the research, everything indicates that kids should meet certain milestones at certain times, right? I mean, certain kids need to be doing certain things by certain areas, but even those things are within 3 to 6 months, 9 to 12, 9 to 12 months, and so they're kind of a blump there. So unschooling basically says that kids are prepared to learn at different ages, right? So we all vary in our learning styles. Some of us are visual, like some people can just look at it and then boom, they can do it. Some people are auditory; they can just hear it once or twice. You know, they can have it told to them. Hey, here's what you need to do, and then I totally envy those people that can just hear something told to them once and then they go do it. I just want to punch them in the face, Paul.
Sure, me too.
And then there's them that are kinesthetic, right? They need to actually be the ones physically doing it. And then there's combinations of each one of those. I'm a visual kinesthetic learner. I need to see it. I need to see somebody doing it. And then I need to do it myself. And really, I probably should be what's called a kinesthetic visual learner, because mostly I just need to sit down and do it myself. Once I've done it one time, typically, from then it's just, 75% easier. Then the next time, I've got it. And so unschooling says that we try to stick to that, and I'm going to wrap it up on this. I've got more that I could go through this stuff. It's my one of my favorite things to talk about. But there was a particular guy. There's the words of a guy named Alec Born, and he wrote it best, I think. He said, "It is possible." He's talking about public school. "It is possible to store the mind with a million facts and still be entirely uneducated."
Yeah.
And that's the core of it right there, is that you can take a kid, you can stick them in a classroom, you can smack an amazingly well-documented book in front of them, and you can have them sit down and learn that. But the reality is you can fill them up with that, and it doesn't make a difference. I mean, I always ask parents, do you remember any of your Spanish 1 and 2 class? Do you remember any of your Spanish anymore? Well, no. Do you remember any of your algebra, or your geometry, mathematical equations? Well, no. And so why is that? Because you can fill a kid up with knowledge, and really all you're teaching them to do is be good at taking tests.
That's right.
That's what it comes down to. There's no connection. There's no passion. There's no love. There's no internal desire to want to memorize those things. And we have a problem with that. We have a problem with that. We don't want our kids learning how to be good professional students. We want our kids to be good at learning, to be passionate about things, to want to not only learn them, but then to memorize them and make them stick.
Wow. That's powerful. And that's a, you know, that's all the right reasons for doing it too, you know, so hats off to you guys. So let's move on here a little bit, Trey. I'll kind of bunch these up, maybe two at a time here. You say your oldest is six. How long have you guys been formally doing, homeschooling? And, on the next one there, most homeschooling goes through, I think, some sort of sponsoring organization so that they can, you know, be, accredited by the state or whatever. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, in terms of how long we've been doing it, really the answer is exactly what you just said, 6 years. When our daughter came out, we had kind of started researching this. We talked at the start, and I want people to hear me say, when my wife and I first discussed this, I was vehemently opposed to it. I didn't want to. I mean, I went through the typical criticisms, you know, that most people go through. Well, what about getting socialization, all that other good stuff? And we'll talk about that here in a little while. But yeah. I was vehement against it. But my wife and I sat down and we discussed it. And we started teaching and educating. Just that's kind of my wife and I's heart. We're kind of natural educators as it is. And so that just kind of started to flow. And one of the other things that kind of led to this was I worked a job where I sat foot in almost every single school in the town that I worked in. And while I was there, I saw there's some amazing teachers out there. I want people to hear there are some teachers that are in the right place, doing the right thing. They have the passion, the heart, and the skill. They have all the right knowledge and wisdom, and they are it. But there, for every one, it seems like we found four more who just didn't have the right heart, and they just were mean. They were mean-spirited. I remember setting foot in several schools that I was talking about in that city I worked in, where I watched parents in a kid's face. I mean, not parents, but teachers in a kid's face, just pointing in their face, just shouting at them, "You will listen to me!" You know, just that classical kind of stuff like that. And I've actually got an article I'm going to be doing next week on Family Podcast Network about the top 25 reasons you don't want to see your kid having gone to detention for, or something like that. And there's these things that kids went to detention for that I'm like, really?
Right.
I mean, like one of them I think was the reason for detention, called me a muggle. And for all you Harry Potter lovers, I mean, if a kid called me a muggle, I would think that's really funny. But see, you know, so even just discouraging that level of somebody's personality. Now, am I saying that we condone disrespect to teachers? Absolutely not. We believe teachers need full 100% respect, and we back behind, you know, the teachers that our kids do have in their life, like Sunday school teachers. You know, we're behind them in that. But anyway, all of that to say, we've been doing it for about the last 6 years just because we became very disillusioned with the public system.
Sure.
Sponsoring organization, at this point, we don't have that. The reason for that is because we have a single car. We became very, you know, we've talked about on the show before, we became very convicted about backing down on expenses. And so we only have a single car, and I use that to get to work. And we don't have an organization inside of our actual city yet at this point, and so we're looking for one, and eventually we will. At the younger ages, at least in the state of Texas, the requirements that you have to meet, like certain tests and whatnot, those kinds of things, it's much more loose. And so at this point, we don't have to worry about it as much. We did an evaluation with a lady who came in a while back who does this kind of test, and she verified that our kids are considerably ahead of where they're supposed to be. That doesn't surprise me. I didn't need that to hear that. My kids have a level of curiosity that is beyond what I typically see, but that's a tough one for me to answer.
Okay, so I'm going to play off that one a little bit here. This one's not on script. So that being the case where you guys don't have an organization right now, and you mentioned Texas, the younger kids, it's a little bit more loose and not such a stringent requirement. Is there a point in time, what's the age where it kicks in where they start, where the state gets more interested in tracking, you know, how the kids are progressing and kind of documenting that more formally? Do you guys know about that yet, and when that's going to have to happen?
You know, in all honesty, I'm not sure of that. I'll guarantee you that my wife could answer that. I know there's an organization called the HSLDA, I think is what it's called.
Okay.
And that's where all that information is at. And my wife has been the one who's specifically the most in tune with that. I know that they just released a House bill, 132, but I think that was for doing driver's license, so never mind, that won't matter. I try to keep up with it. I try to keep up with it, but I honestly don't do a very good job with it. I kind of let my wife run that side of it.
I tried
to see if I could get her on the show today. I tried seeing if we could work it out to where if we could time it just right with a nap, if I could get her on here, but we weren't able to coordinate with this week because of how busy it's been. So I'm bummed we couldn't get her on here. Because
it's thoughts for a future episode, though. That might be fun to have one or more of the wives on here coming up in the future. It could get interesting.
I think so. And Corey,
all right. Go ahead. Since you're not through a sponsoring organization, my next question had to do with how much does it cost and how much interaction happens with other homeschooled students. So I guess, you know, go on those. If you're not in an organization, I assume there's no fixed cost of, you know, books and curriculum and so forth you have to do. Take me down that path a little bit.
Yeah. I was about to say the answer is, in reality, even when you go down with an organization, most of the time, at least in Texas, this is what I do know. Texas requires a certain level of limits of things that they have to know by a certain age. So the answer is you can spend however much you want to. You can spend nothing. You can spend thousands if you want in getting book curriculum. I mean, there's specific stuff that is designed to meet the regulations and requirements of every state that's out there. There's even religious-based stuff if that's a big thing to you. Mm-hmm. And so you can find just about anything that you want to. But there's tons of curriculum, books, tutors. There's even some things that we've discovered, which are some of the iPad and iPhone apps that are out there.
Yeah.
We kind of practice a thing called I think it's called Montessori. It was a lady who was mm-hmm. Her last name was Montessori. Very, very fascinating perspective. And anyway, we found some apps that are actually based on Montessori educational and that educational approach that they did, which I think she was an Italian physician, I think, years ago. Anyway,
okay.
Very, very neat. If you ever get a chance, go Google search Montessori education. Very, very interesting how she takes that approach. But again, the reason why we like it so much is the basic emphasis is like kids are allowed independence and freedom. So like if we want to teach our kids how to read, we may give them three or four different games that they can play that teach them how to read. And then they can pick whichever one they want to do, right? So there's freedom in there for them to pick what they like doing the most. My wife stumbled upon these Montessori apps in the iTunes store the other day, and we picked them up. I think they were like $10 for like three of them. And let me tell you, Paul, that has been awesome. I mean, absolutely awesome. Everything from our 6 years old. You know, we were talking about those life cycle things. It just so happened to have a life cycle app. So we picked that up as well because that's been a big thing for our daughter right now. And, I mean, it's gone through everything from the life cycle of the butterfly all the way to the life cycle of a rock. I mean, you don't think about that. But when you stop and really it makes sense. You know, like rocks have, in terms of geology, they have they're pressurized, they're formed, they're created, and then they have a half life, and then eventually they degrade and they break back down. And so anyway, we picked that up for them. There's another one on there that we use. It's actually called Penguins of Madagascar. I don't know if anybody's ever seen that, but they had a learning app for that involved the Penguins of Madagascar. Well, my son loves them because they love karate, and my son thinks that anything with yah-wah-wah is awesome. Yeah. But they teach math concepts. So you've got to, quote-unquote, finger punch different numbers whenever they call them out. And then the other day, my wife called me in and said she started doing actual more formal education with our two-year-old, Cora. And she goes, Trey, watch this. And she sat down, and my little two-year-old was sitting there dragging colors and matching them on this little board at 2 years old. She could put a little finger on that iPad and drag it and drop those colors. And then there was a matching game for her. She could match pictures and it would flip the card back over and she could match them up and stuff like that. Super, super cool stuff. And technology has made this level of what we're doing so, so much easier.
Yeah, it's broken down a lot of barriers to be for sure. So, all right. So, other homeschool students there, do you guys, I mean, outside the four that your wife already has already, God bless her, do you guys get out and are there activities how much networking do you do with other homeschool parents in the area? And do you guys get involved with incorporating them with the other students? And that question really came from what you mentioned earlier, the social aspect. How much other interaction with other kids do they get?
Fantastic. The question again is however much you want to give it to them. We're limited at this point again because of the single car. However, I mean, we live smack dab in the middle of town, and so there's plenty of things that we can get them hooked up with. There are tons of homeschooling alliances here in Abilene and even some that are starting to kind of formulate in a big church that we have not too far from where we live in Tuscola. And I think you'd be blown away. If you'll type in wherever you live, Birmingham, Alabama, Homeschool Alliance or something to that effect, you will be amazed at how many places that you can find. There's tons of folks out there that are getting into this. I think a lot of people are getting to two points. Number one, they're taking a look at the educational system. I think a lot of people are doing this. Everybody's looking at the educational system saying something's not right here. Something's yep. not working. You know, we've got these kids that obviously are not MR. They're not, you know, they don't have disorders or issues, but they're struggling in these school settings. And why is that? So that's most everybody's asking that question. The second half of them, which is what typically makes homeschooling parents, is there's some of them that are saying, you know what, this is my kid. This is important, and I'm ready to make that choice now. I'm ready to do that. It's hard. I mean, it really is. It puts a strain on my wife. I know that is. I mean, it's a lot of work.
Yeah. However, so let's. I'm going to jump down to another one here. So obviously, she's a stay-at-home mom.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, how else would she do this?
Yes, you know, and I always want to tell people, because I'm always afraid when I tell people that my wife is a stay-at-home mom that they're going to afraid like I'm some kind of chauvinist or anything like that. My wife has a bachelor's in psychology, just like I do, and she, I mean, super sharp. And I made it very clear to her. I said, hey, listen, if you want to go to work, man, we'll completely support that. But if you want to stay home, we'll figure out a way to make that happen. And my wife said, I want to stay home. And this was one of the primary reasons. This was kind of one of the reasons that we led into that decision was we knew that we wanted to have our kids at home so that way we could educate them. And so, yes, my wife is – actually, I don't call her a stay-at-home mom to most people. I call her a domestic engineer.
Absolutely, she is. I was just going to say that if you didn't go there is that, you know, if anybody thinks about a stay-at-home mom as somebody that's not working, you listen to the wrong station here because Trey and I both know that that mom is a more than full-time job. So.
Well, I tell you, I've had to take her job a couple of times, like when she's been sick and even recently when she caught that stomach bug. And I'm telling you, you don't stop. I mean – You work all day, you're doing this, you're keeping this straight and clean, you're teaching the kids this, you're educating them on that, you're running through the school and you're getting them here and you're getting them there, and then you get them to sleep, and then you know the other one's not feeling well, so you've got the monitor on your side and you're listening to their room, and you never really, he's kind of sleeping with one eye open, so it just never stops. And so I admire my wife for what she does, and not only that, but how well she does it.
Sure. So how much time out of her day would you say, or would she say, that she's in formal or semi-formal homeschooling mode? I mean, I know we're always teaching our kids as part of being a parent throughout life, but how much time would she say is being spent on that process itself?
Absolutely. You know, that's a hard question to answer because – again, I think a lot of people get again to that teaching mindset, that idea of the classroom. But in reality, I sat down with Corey and we came up with a formula for what we think is to try to extrapolate what that is. And I would be willing to say that my wife can condense what most 2 to 6 year olds learn in 8 hours of a school day. She condenses it down into about 2 hours, 3 if they really go long because they're having a really big blast on what they're doing. But I would say 2 to 3 hours, everything that they go through at this age, they can get it all crammed into that. And again, it's kind of unfair to say that because I think a lot of people said, well, my gosh, what are the public schools doing and all this other thing? And that's not a very fair thing because
it's not.
In reality, schools don't have the freedom to accentuate kids' you know, skills and gifts, you know. One of the things that we discovered, and it sounds weird, is my daughter learns better when she chews gum. I mean, it sounds weird, but think about it. What's one of the number one rules of
classrooms? One of the first rules, right?
Uh-huh.
No gum in class.
Spit your gum out when you come in that classroom, right?
Right.
And so, and I understand why teachers do that. I understand you don't want to have, you know, 6 inches of gum stuck to a bottom of a desk. I mean, I totally understand that and I respect it. But for my daughter, that's actually a hindrance. And so it's not fair to make a comparison there because my daughter can chew gum. My son can be up and wiggling and moving around and walking all around the table while he's working on his stuff. He can be playing a video game on the iPad, which is actually a learning game that in most cases, most schools are not implementing in. And so they just learn just so fast because they're doing what they love. Yeah. We also are able to connect their passions. So we may be teaching the exact same subject to each one of them, right? But we're using dinosaurs and science with my daughter, and then we're using action video games. Like my son just somehow found VR Power Rangers, which is virtual reality Power Rangers, and man, I tell you, that is one of the biggest cheeseball shows in the world. But let me tell you, that little guy loves it. So guess what? Guess what? Mama and I did. Once we discovered that he loved VR Troopers, we started finding everything that we could that was Power Ranger involved to start helping teaching him. And let me tell you, he wants to work because he knows that he's going to be counting by going, yah, yah, and punching at stuff, right? Because that's what he loves to do. And that's how we teach him. Okay, we need five punches. Can you show us five? One, two, three, four, five. And so not only is he getting to do what he loves and play and shout and be as loud as he wants, but he's also learning how to count to 10 while he's doing it. And that's a very, very, very big piece of it right there.
Yep, absolutely. Because they want to do it, they're going to do it. So it's just and that's what kids are about. Kids want to have fun. You mentioned earlier the experience with you with your oldest daughter outside, and that was, you know, that was a teaching moment. It was something for her to learn, part of what she was doing. I want to take that a little bit more out there. Your wife does the lion's share of this. How much are you sharing in the process? You talk about maybe that 2 hour a day thing. Is there are there things that you guys delay until the evening or the weekends when Trey's home to be able to do this, or how do you guys negotiate that?
You know, we've noticed that a lot of what my role in the way I assume it is this. So the answer to your question, first off, formally, is as much as I can is the answer. So the minute I walk in that door, I start teaching them what I teach them, and then all the way until when they're in bed. You know, we're still doing that. We've kind of discovered that Corey handles a lot more of the formal stuff. Like right now, my kids are learning how to read. We're also teaching them hand-eye coordination, whether that be through coloring or painting or making stuff. We're teaching them a lot of the tactile stuff. My daughter is moving into math already. She was ready to start math whenever she realized she couldn't count how many dinosaurs there were on one page, and so because she wanted to know how many dinosaurs there were, she wanted to know how to read because she wanted the information, and she wanted to know how to count so she could tell how many of those that there were. And so I've noticed that my role has become a lot of the relational parts of it, especially when it comes to like leadership qualities and those kinds of things, which, I mean, if you think about it, we've got a large absence in that. In our public schools nowadays is teaching kids how to be good leaders. I've noticed that I've fallen more on the relational side of it. I teach them about the relationship skills, how instead of seeing Cora come up and try to take something from him, then rip it away and say, no! A lot of my stuff is more on the emphasis of, okay, what's a better way to do that, sugar? Instead of ripping it away and saying no, why don't we say, I'm not done playing with it, but can we wait? I've also found that I pick up a lot more of the science. My wife is a huge science nerd. She's got a biology minor along with her psychology major. But I found that just for some reason, I've kind of become our science nerd, even though my wife can probably teach it better than I do. But I've just, and I think a lot of that's because I'm also more in the prototypical, you know, daddy role. I'm the rough and tumble. I'm the outside playing and jumping on the trampoline with them. And so when we're outside is whenever you're surrounded by biology. And so I think that's where a lot of this comes up is that we'll get to talking about critters and we'll get to talking about how things die and decomposition and so and just a lot of those kind of flow. So again, relationship and I found that science are my two bigger things that I've noticed that I wind up teaching the most. I do a lot of individual one-on-one time with my kids. 90% of that, we'll say, is relationship-based. It's about that one-on-one stuff. I really do practice what I preach on Family Podcast Network, which is I believe parents need to be spending individual time with each kid for at least a short period of time. I mean, if you can only do 15 minutes, once a day, do that. If you need to do an hour one day, something to that effect, that you're spending one-on-one time, no other kids, no distractions. And so I've also found that while that's about 90% relational in capacity of what I'm trying to do, it becomes about 100% educational. We always talk about something, whether it's, Dad, why is there fog on the window? You know, why is it doing that? Oh, well, then we start talking about condensation. Well, then that leads to talking about what is vapor. Well, then that leads to about how does water go to a vapor? Then we get to talking about molecules. And, you know, and you can just and you just see how they just move on and on and on and on. So again, for the same practice that we give our kids, we try to find those things that they have their gifting in and then put them in that role. We do the same thing ourselves is we pick what Corey teaches the best, and that's her primary thing. What do I teach the best? And then that's my primary thing. And then it allows them to grow. And then there's a third component to this that a lot of people don't think about. Our kids, 6, 4, and 2, are in the same room all day long, right? The reality is this. My daughter teaches my son. My son teaches my littlest daughter, and even my middle son, who's 4, he even teaches my daughter, who's older, in certain things. For instance, Anna just didn't really have a huge desire to read at the start, but Grant wanted to. He started learning how to read more and more reading stuff. So my daughter Anna fell in love with math, though. She liked numbers and math. So guess what happens? Guess what Anna teaches Grant? She teaches him the math. Exactly. And then he is now teaching her
reading.
How to read. You know, there's a phrase out there, Paul, that always I thought is just the most dumb phrase ever. But they said, those who can't do, teach. And I think that is the biggest load of crap in the world, because I have never understood parenting better than when I had to get to a point where I was trying to teach people on a podcast what I was trying to say. I think there is an element of teaching that makes you learn, understand, and ingrain something considerably deeper. And so getting to watch my daughter trying to explain to my son what this 3 + 3 means, it's so neat to watch her. And she'll go, okay, well, let me show you this. And then she'll go grab some pens. And she'll put, and I watch her, she goes, here's 1 pen, here's 2 pen, here's 3 pens. So that's 3. So if you do 3 + 3 more, and then she laid 3 more pens out. I mean, tell me, I mean, I'm going to be honest, even as a dude, I got a little choked up at that. Watching my daughter educate so gently and so compassionately my little son on how to count. And so that's a third component that a lot of people don't think about is that now you've got older siblings educating. And let me tell you, when Grant figured it out, I wish I could have taken a picture of the pride in my daughter's eyes when she realized I just taught him how to count something. I'm getting a little choked up talking about this now, but it was beautiful. So beautiful.
Yep, that is. So, that third leg that the kids teaching and learning off each other, that is something else when you've got the multiple kids at home doing that. So we got a few more minutes here, Trey. I'm going to skip over some of these because I think some of them kind of self-answer themselves, like classes delivered at another site, like a school or something. I kind of pick up there. You guys do it pretty much all at home. I would assume I had a question on here about homework, but I would guess you guys probably get everything done while you're doing that. So there's no notion of homework. And come back and bring it the next day. And the online question I had, you guys are using apps and other things you can find with the tools you have at the house there. So if I misstated any of that there, let me know. Trey, what are the biggest challenges?
I'm gonna quote from my wife on this. Her number one thing she said is time. The problem with being a stay-at-home mom or a domestic engineer is that you have multiple roles, and I'm going to quote what she said here, but she says, being a stay-at-home mom means that my life is busy 24 hours a day, and you've got to find time to put down the iron, put away the vacuum, and teach. So she said that's the number one. Corey and I both agree with this one here. There is sometimes that fear of, am I going to be able to teach them everything? And the fundamental answer is that, I mean, in its basic nature, yes, we can do that. However, there's one thing that we have to remember when you do this is that, number one, you're not alone. There are so many people that are starting to do this. And not only that, they're starting to form kind of some coalitions together. They're starting to get together and they're collaborating. And so the fact of the matter is that you're starting to watch like crossover sharing. You know, for instance, in this mentality, I was reading on how they do this. So for instance, I could get involved with this and I could teach a class how to build a website. And run a podcast, for instance. I can teach them how to do that. So we could do podcast 101 and get all the kids that are interested in that coming in. And then another of the moms or the dads who are out there who love algebra then can come in and teach that subject. There's tons of online resources. But two biggest things is managing time, because now you don't have a class bell ringing on a scheduled timer that's going to tell you when it's time to go to the next class. And so that's your worst enemy. It's also your best friend. So if one of your kids needs to work on math a little bit longer, the bell doesn't go off and now they've got to take it home. They can work on that as long as they need to, because in reality, they're probably going to sit down for science and then smoke right through their science assignment because they love it and they know it and they've got it and it just comes naturally to them. And so it really balances itself out in a lot of ways. But the bottom line is you're not doing alone. So biggest challenges.
All right. That's a good one there. I would imagine that the time element is that too. And, you know, probably the juggling act that your wife has to do there, because let's say Grant does have to spend a little bit more time on his math, but maybe she's ready to move on with something else with the other kids. How do you do that? Yeah. And how do you work that in without Grant feeling like that, you know, he's, you know, either, you know, being left behind or not staying up with the rest of what's going on? I can imagine there's all kind of dynamics that happen, you know, all the time with that, really. Going on with the time thing here, I didn't really have this question on here. Do you guys really observe a start and an end to a school year, or is this just something y'all just keep on doing year round?
You know, we actually do, and a lot of that is because our kids have so many friends who do a school time. Like, you know, for all of our all of their friends that they have, like even the little kiddo right across the street who's their best friend. I mean, she has one, so we started one. In reality, it was at their request. They came and said, "Hey, can we start school tomorrow?" And so in our minds, we're thinking, I mean, the answer is no. They've been doing it this whole time. I mean, we were doing school over summer. But sure. Because it's so fun to them, it doesn't feel – they don't need the break. It's not sitting in a classroom for 8 hours a day trying to have fun and something that's not fun to them. And so – but we did officially go ahead and start a school year. And so my wife and I sat down and said, okay, we need an official start for them. So what we did was we said, well, let's take a look and see if we can find some apps. That's when we stumbled across those Montessori apps that we thought, oh, man, these are amazing. So that quote unquote began our official start. Some of that's just helping them normalize and feeling like they're doing something normal as well, like what everybody else does. And we want them to feel that as much as possible. But again, it was reacting off the needs of what they're saying. So I'm not telling anybody who's thinking about doing this, who's listening today, yeah, definitely have that for your kids. They may need that, they may not. But listen to your kids. They may say, absolutely, I want that. If you don't know, you can always ask, hey, do y'all want to have an official school start time? And they may say yes. But in reality, you're doing it year-round. I did want to speak to something you said earlier. You're asking about interactions when it comes to like homeschool students and whatnot. I did read up the other day that here in Abilene, there is actually a homeschooling alliance who's gotten together, and they actually meet at a school and teach a homeschool curriculum. So the reality is it's modular in most cases. I mean, really, you can kind of put together whatever meets your needs as a family the best. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about it is there is no thing that you have to come and do it this way. It's very flexible. It allows you to pick this and pick that and put them together in whatever way that helps your kid learn the best. Because there may be one of them who doesn't want to go to full school because they'd rather get their schooling done early in the afternoon and then have the rest of the day off. But maybe they need some of that structured classroom setting. Yeah. Maybe you don't have a room at home. We have an 800-square-foot house with 6 people living in it. We don't have room for a official schoolroom. We have a great relationship with our church, so we go there, and we'll do a lot of stuff in the church as well that we have during the week when nobody's there. But that you can find almost anything that you need. It's extremely flexible.
Very good. Very good. All right. So I've got just a couple more questions here, and then we'll wrap up for the day. We started to touch a little bit about the social development. What concerns do you really have there about that in your kids? And kind of to play off that, too, you got a little while till they get here, but what are you guys' future plans once your kids start to reach junior high and high school?
In terms of the social development piece of this, I have absolutely no concerns whatsoever. I mean, I'm going to quote my wife on this because I tell you, my wife is so cool. I love my wife. She's so much fun. She quotes, "We are not going to go hide up in the hills and build our compound and then never allow our junior out except to buy ammo." I thought that was perfect. We're not those kinds of people. As a matter of fact, we're very big. I mean, I'm a therapist, guys. I'm a psychology background, so you better believe that social aspect and social psychology is high on my priority. We have absolutely zero problems with it. Your kid, there are so many things that you can do, so many ways to get creative, so many places that you can get them involved with sports and extracurricular stuff and Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts and VBS, depending on if your church does a vacation Bible school, and being involved in church. We live right smack dab in the middle of town. Their best friend lives right across the street. And so, I mean, in reality, it's absolutely up to you. It's really cool. I mean, we take time. We go to church, you know, every week. We go to the park. We actually have a local splash pad here, you know, which is kind of like a mini water park that's open during the summer for our kids. And so we take them there. And so all of these things require interaction with others. The fact of the matter is, and I'm going to quote my wife here. She goes, "My kids don't go sit in the corner and rock back and forth when they get in congested settings. They are." She's so much fun. I love my wife. She goes, "They are in the mix of things. Anna is our social butterfly. She's our making friends kiddo and asking people their names, etc. Grant is our natural leader. He is out and kids follow him around. He is compassionate and loving and always wanting to make sure that others are comfortable and feel accepted." I've seen that in both of my kids. They are just they are so incredible with that. And these are not the kids that, as a psychologist, I would be looking at being worried. In reality, I think that, the social aspect for our kids comes easier than it does for a lot of kids that go to public school. I mean, let's be honest. First off, who doesn't know a kid who goes to public school who is just as much of an asocial introvert as anybody else? I mean, there are kids in school right now who don't make friends well, right?
Yeah.
Right. Our kids, because our kids don't get locked in a classroom with other kids for 8 hours a day, always being around them. And I'm going to say this, and I mean it a little forcefully, maybe, but they don't get forced. Maybe that's an emotionally charged word, but I mean they're not forced to make friendships with other people. They actually have to go seek them out. And so when we go places, they actually go around and they make friends and they say, hi, what's my name? Because, again, we've had them at home. We've been able to teach them to do that. We've been able to be involved with them all day and teach them how to develop relationships, make friends, maintain, sustain, care about people. Our kids are some of the most friendly, I mean, just easy to connect kids of all of them. Even my daughter, and I want to make sure people are clear, my son, Grant, is like his daddy. He's an extrovert. He gets fired up when he's around people. He's so excited when he gets to be around people. I mean, he is just like his daddy. Anna is like her mama. She's my little introvert. She needs to get away from people to kind of get recharged, and then she can be around people again, right? But so she's a little bit more detached. And even my introvert is still a social butterfly, bouncing around, talking, hi, I'm Anna, you know, and talking and playing and interacting with them. And so I have – and I'm – again, remember, going back to my disclaimer, this is not saying that anybody's doing anything wrong. It's not the purpose here. But I see more social adaptability in my kids than I do in every single kid that I've seen in a public school to date.
Very neat.
And I want to apologize to anybody if that sounds like prideful and arrogant. I'm going to be honest. I've gotten lucky or blessed or whatever word you want to use for that. I pick blessed out of my vernacular, but I've been blessed to get us to this point. We've kind of stumbled onto this, and what we feel is just kind of God taking us here with that. So this isn't like, look how cool we are as parents. I mean, it's just kind of one of those, God, I'm glad you're there, or else we would have crashed and burned on this. You know what I mean?
Yep. All right. Last question was about high school.
Right, right. We've made the decision. Corey and I have sat down and talked about that. We're going to let them, once they get to that point, we kind of have a belief system about when kids start to become responsible for decision making. And for us, the answer is when they're ready. At this rate, I mean, I think our kids are going to be ready to make decisions by the time they're going to get to about junior high and high school. So we've decided that we're going to give them that decision. Okay. I am going to hope that they don't. Is what my honest hope is. I'm going to be very upfront with my kids. I hope you don't, but we are going to give them that opportunity to choose. My reasons behind that is not, oh, daddy doesn't want him to get out there and get hurt. No, we're big about failure. We want our kids to experience failure. We want our kids to experience social failure. We want our kids to experience bullies and hard things at school and difficult personalities because they are a reality of life. My reasoning for not wanting my kids to go to junior high and high school is my guess is if my kids keep up what they're doing, I'm afraid they're going to be ahead of most of their students. And everybody knows that the kid who's ahead or behind typically has a harder time. And right. So my concern is they're going to be bored because they've been used to being able to incorporate what they're passionate about. And I already know the dissenters, what they're going to say. Well, they should learn to get into to doing things that they hate to do because that's life. My question is bullcrap. Why?
Doesn't have to be.
Does it have to be that? Because somebody sold you that you were supposed to go to a school and be bored all day and learn how to be good at being bored at something that you hate to do so that way you can graduate and go get a job being bored, hating doing something as well. Why is that what we're supposed to do? And we say it's not. There's no reason why we can't be passionate about what we love to do because kids learn that way better. So, again, we don't want to sound like it's overprotective. We want our kids to fall and bang themselves up and get hurt, not because we knock them over or anything, but experiencing life. But my concern is that it's gonna slow them down enough and it's going to be boring.
Trey, fabulous, fabulous information. You know, my hat's off to you guys for how you're doing it and how you're kind of taking that unschooled approach to it. And if you're going to do it, you know, don't just take something somebody else is already doing in school and just bring it into the house.
Right.
If you're going to do it,
good.
You may as well make it a unique and interesting experience and something that fits you guys and your kids and your lifestyles as well.
That's
so
really good.
Awesome information here. Anything else you want to add before we wrap up today?
Well, again, I want people to hear me say that if you're looking at this, you're not alone. There's a lot of people out there. There's tons of support. Paul and I would like to be a resource for you on this. You can always contact the Real Family Guys podcast as well and do that. But again, I want people to hear me say, I understand that there are some – for some folks, this is not for them. And I understand it's a pain in the butt, and I don't blame you. There's sometimes I look back and think, man, I do miss how easy it was. And I want people to hear me say there's no judgment or criticism in this in any capacity. And And so that's my Jerry. That's it.
All right. That's well said and a good wrap up here, folks. We appreciate you listening today. Stop by one of our websites. Trey is at thefamilypodcastnetwork.com. I am at affluentstudent.com. Click on that telephone icon on the right hand side of either one of our pages and you can leave us a voice message and let us know what you think, what you want to talk about, and what we can do to serve you better here on the Real Family Guys podcast every week. You'll find a new episode of us here every Friday and we appreciate you listening. Head over to iTunes and give us a rating over there. Let us know what you think, and that way the word spreads over there and we start to percolate up and other people will start to get exposed to some of this content too. So again, thank you for stopping by today and we hope you have an awesome day.
We'll see you guys next week.